Let's take nature out of the equation then and focus in on nurture. You've talked about the importance of school and school sports culture in dissuading many girls from participating. You've touched on questions of wider body image in our society. Are there other kinds of barriers that are preventing or dissuading girls and women from participating in sport?
Somehow girls are being put off very, very young, and actually in terms of just gendered identity, it's quite interesting that the Equal Opportunities Commission, which has now been wrapped up in the Commission on Equality and Human Rights, but they looked at what forms gendered identity and found that sport is one of the things that you talk about to denote whether you're a boy or a girl at 4 or 5 years old, very, very young. So it's recognising that the cultural barrier sets in very young. What can help girls? Looking at the range of activities available and recognising that actually going onto the hockey pitch and playing hockey is asking quite a lot of a girl who, A, has very little confidence or possibly even the literacy, physical literacy skills. And maybe it does need to start with dance, yoga, table tennis, mountaineering. There are so many other sports that aren't gendered in the same way. Sports Scotland have trialled an approach in Scotland where rather than have sports clubs that are based on a particular sport, so the football club, they just have a club for girls. And what they've done is started with stuff like dance and aerobics, but found that as the confidence has grown in those activities, the girls have then wanted to go on and do the team sport stuff.
Schools, in a way, are one of the easier points of intervention for anyone who's campaigning on these issues. But there's also a great plethora of informal and formal sports organisations in this country, athletics clubs, football leagues, etc., etc. What kind of culture is out there in those organisations? How good are they at encouraging girls and women to come into sport?
On a scale of 1 to 10?
Yeah.
0.5, perhaps.
0.5 is low. How did we end up with sports clubs and a kind of amateur sports participatory culture that, by the sounds of it, is pretty exclusionary?
First of all, the points made about the people that run them tend to be people that have participated in and excelled at that sport. And so it's still a huge emphasis on competition and success. So the keen but crap, if I'm allowed to talk about these folks, the people that really love doing something but don't actually do it very well, often are left on the sidelines. I mean, there are some great campaigns like Give Us Back Our Game in Football, which is trying to get parents to calm down about the competitive elements of sport. But you see that really in focus in sports governing bodies. And I think what I would say is that they're very poor at understanding their potential audience. There is pressure being applied because the government, quite correctly, is saying public money can't be added in to the huge amount of money in sport that comes from commercial revenues, and saying public money needs to be driven at actually increasing participation and making sure people get a good quality experience. But I think that there's still a huge amount of culture shift that needs to happen in sports governing bodies. There are some notable exceptions.
Give us the good news story. Tell us about the notable exceptions.
Well, I think cycling's quite interesting in that it has obviously been doing very, very well at the elite level. And yet, of course, they're taking advantage of all the wider policy agendas around cycling because of concerns about the environment and health and fitness, and have managed to evolve the governing body to be quite responsive to all of those agendas. And I know that there are still people that would say, even for cycling, there's too much emphasis on the medals. And you can see why, because, of course, that's where they get all the plaudits and attention. But actually, a very few people want to cycle in that way. But they have managed to diversify.
Let me ask you a question then about cycling and its presentation to the world. I picked up a magazine called Observer Sports Monthly recently, and there was Victoria Pendleton, who is a gold medalist in cycling for Britain, a leading role model for young women and girls to come into cycling. And there she is, naked on a bicycle on the front page of the magazine. How do you respond to that?
Well, actually, there was, I think it was the 50th anniversary edition of the Observer Sport magazine, and they published all the covers, and it was fascinating to look through them all and see that on the occasions that they did show women, they were highly stylized and often sexualized images, which of course generally isn't the case with the guys. I know David Beckham always gets raised as the exception as a sports star who seems particularly interested in being seen as a sexual object, but he is the exception. So Victoria Pendleton, I mean, she was obviously doing the Lance Armstrong shot that had been done previously. And I think in some ways you think, well, why shouldn't an athlete be pictured naked? The difference in her case is that it is in a culture in which women are always depicted or often depicted as a sexual being, not predominantly as an athlete. And I think that's the difference with the shot, but also recognising that it's very hard for female athletes to break through, and they're in a really difficult place, aren't they? Because they either play the game and give the sports editors what they want and get their kit off, and get the profile and get the promotion and get the money and actually have a successful career, or they don't. Our job is to point these things out and say we need to start actually championing women athletes because of their athletic achievement. And the fact that they happen to be pretty or not is really not the point. Really not the point. And as an organisation, one of our goals is to make being active attractive, which is difficult because you're not going to stop this being a beauty-obsessed culture, but we need to shift our conception of beauty so it's no longer about being passive and decorative, which is actually what women have been primarily valued for hundreds of years.